gentlemen, wherever you are around the world, welcome back. And we're talking to the remarkable William Tompkins about a luncheon that he had on top of a mountain. Well, the mountain probably, I'm going to guess, will be 5,000 feet, something like that in elevation. And he and a group of nearly 30 people drove from Medford west to out in the middle, literally, of God's country, nowhere. And there were very strange signs leading off a highway with round signs with an ET face on it all the way up to this mountain. And at the top of the mountain, as you just heard, was a very strange, we call it paved or improved flat area. And at one point, they believed they saw three automobiles, but these automobiles were hovering above the ground. They weren't automobiles. And this is daylight. They drove back down the road and found an enormous structure, four stories in height, walked in, were not greeted by anyone, and finally a young woman came up and apologized and took them into apparently a large meeting room where there were about 30 other people. Take it away, Bill. Let's hear the rest.
Okay. just one thing about the three vehicles. My impression was that these were three massive helicopters, like they would be maybe 100 feet long.
That's awfully massive.
But other people didn't see the blades on the top. So there were different versions of what those bright painted vehicles that were 5 feet above the ground with no landing gear. And so we're into a different life here now.
Got it.
So going into this great big room.
What was the building like, Bill? I'm sorry. What was the building like? Was it wood on the outside, like a log cabin building, or was it a more of a modern construction? What was it like?
It was extremely all wood, wood
all
roof,
wood.
And a sort of old looking, like it had been there for a thousand years, but obviously it wasn't. But the size of the main living room was enormous, and it had all these heads of bears and lions, that had been cut off and put on the walls, and all over it, all kinds of pictures of different animals and this sort of thing.
They had African animals, lions.
No, not
mountain lions.
Mountain lions, okay, and bears.
Okay.
Must have been 20 different bears down the one wall.
Wow.
They were on three walls. The other wall was all glass with a gorgeous view. They were all talking, and they said that they enjoyed having us there, and there was just sort of introductions and a drink before dinner or before lunch.
Yeah.
And then they escorted us into this great big dining room, and which was separate. And the west side of that had this fantastic view out towards the Pacific Ocean. Unbelievable.
Could you see the Pacific Ocean?
No, we could not.
No, you're too far inland.
We were
figured,
high
no.
up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Too
yeah.
Far
okay.
Inland.
Yeah.
But it was a beautiful view. I mean, spectacular.
Bet. Yeah.
And the interesting thing about this is that who were the people in this Navy League Council, and where did we meet? Well, because the airport commissioner, the guy that ran the airport.
Medford Airport.
Medford Airport. We used his conference room as for many of our meetings.
I see.
And then the mayor, we had some of our meetings at the mayor's office. Hmm. And then we had some of our meetings at the commissioner's office. And
Rick Holt?
Rick Holt. Yeah. Now, I was wrong in saying that somebody called the office. I remember now that Rick Holt got the call. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And I've talked to his son later, but that's one of the people you might want to check with. But anyway, Rick was very knowledgeable, and this is important in the fact that he attended this rain dance, okay?
Oh, he was with you in the group that went up there?
Yes.
Okay, and I didn't get that. I got it now. Yeah.
Okay. And so, but Rick Holt is, his family is Senator Goldwater's family.
I didn't know that.
And so everything that Goldwater was doing, Rick Holt would repeat in the meetings because Goldwater was involved in the government at a very high level on military. And he had been a general in the Air Force.
Yeah.
And this man knew all about extraterrestrials and everything that Goldwater knew, Rick Holt knew.
Oh.
Because Rick Holt, when he was gone, he would be over with the family. And Goldwater's house. And he would bring his family, take the kids out of school, and go over to, fly over to Goldwater's house. And they would get together for another 2 or 3 weeks. And so the kids would be pulled out of school while they're doing this.
That's amazing.
And so he knew everything about extraterrestrial. Okay?
Now, you know the story, about Goldwater asking General Curtis LeMay, we've talked about that, about E.T., and LeMay became furious and said, damn it, don't ever ask me that again. He wouldn't answer.
Don't ever ask me that again, period.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but they were very close individuals. They were friends.
Sure.
They weren't...
I understand.
And... So
back at the lodge, or whatever this place was, were you served food? Was there food there going on? What was going on?
Yeah, everybody talked and they had the drinks, we sat down with them. They sat on this long, very long table, and we sat on the other side of one long table. So we were facing the view in the windows. They were facing the wall.
And the bears.
Okay. And the bears, yeah. And the deer. And so the conversation went everything normal until one of them said, we're very interested in what your thrust is. And so these people knew exactly what our thrust was. They knew exactly what we were doing. They knew every individual that was in the council. They knew knew all about their families. They knew they were in the Navy. They knew they were officers. All ball wax. They knew everything about us. And as this progressed and more questions were asked about extraterrestrial and what we were doing and Mount Shasta, and other areas in the Northwest where extraterrestrials have been very heavy. Like, a lot of people don't know that the big tower in Seattle, Washington,
the Space Needle,
that's a copy of one of the UFOs that everybody saw up there and landed.
Yeah.
And, in fact, two of those vehicles landed close to, like, 30 miles outside of Seattle, believe it or not.
Huh.
And
okay.
There's the whole story that goes with that.
Yeah. Bill, what did the people across the table look like? Normal folks? What did they look like?
They looked exactly like us, except I would say they were better-looking men and certainly more beautiful women. Okay?
Right.
And, but everybody's dressed like we were. Know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And then before one question was answered by us, everything changed. And that that dining room became all glass, glass ceiling, glass walls, we were not on the planet at all. We were way out in the galaxy in just 1 second, all of us. Now, they changed from the outfits they were wearing to, frankly, more skimpy outfits, most of it white. And we were sitting at the same table, but it had changed to an all-glass table. Our chairs were, you couldn't, they were like glass chairs or some sort of a plastic that's clear, not the chairs we've been sitting on. And so now we're out in the galaxy, we're looking down on a massive futuristic city, and we are all talking, and they're explaining things to us, and this went on for a good 5 minutes, and then bang, we're back in the place that we started with. Now, I say we were there for 5 minutes, but again, we've argued, all of us have argued, how long we were really out there versus the time that we were in the old building. And everybody's got a different number. And the interesting thing about this is that there was no highway up to this facility. The only way you could get there was by helicopter. Only way you could get there, or by some sort of a spaceship.
Well, you went up on that real ratty road, though. 45-degree road.
Yeah, and so it took us a long time to get there. They already knew it was going to take us a long time to get there, so they postponed that luncheon almost 2 hours.
I see.
For we're trying to get, because we're only doing 3 miles an hour and stopping.
Sure.
Because we're starting to slide down the side of the mountain.
Oh, no. Yeah. Wow.
And so it really worried us. We finally got up there. Now, going back, and this is extremely important, going back,
tell us more about the luncheon. What did you eat? What happened? And then you said goodbye and wind up the affair itself.
Yeah, and so it ended up that they were to contact us, and they wanted to get together some specific people, and they named those people. And their mission was to contact this group of Navy people, ex-Navy people, and implement some of the agendas that we had, and clear up some of the areas that we were. And I didn't get into what we really did, but like, there's a fellow that his name was Joe Royal, R-O-Y-A-L. He's a Navy commander. Now listen to this. He's commander of the Naval Reserve Center there in Medford, okay? So he took over this command by calling me and having me meet him for breakfast at the Red Lion Restaurant downtown.
Right.
And he had spent the last 7 years, part of the time was in Area 51, and the rest was in another facility much larger. His mission and his assignment, because he was a physicist, not just a Navy commander, and he had to decipher the materials used on the extraterrestrial vehicles which had crashed. He spent 7 years doing this, and he never could come up with the material as it really was. So he was in a nervous condition. His wife and children were nervous because of him. So they told him that his order was to take over this small Navy Reserve Center at Medford. And this is putting you out to pasture so that you can recover. And then you've got to come back and finish your job. Now, the guy who was also a Navy commander that was head of that same reserve facility, because I had talked to him because we were using their facility for some of our meetings. Okay? He got the orders that he had to go to San Diego, go aboard and command a landing assault aircraft carrier. He then froze. He couldn't believe he tried to get out of this job. He talked to me like we were brothers and told me the whole story. He knew that he would put up the wrong command, and when they're putting the water into the aft side so yes. they could get the tanks out into the ocean,
yeah.
he would go too far and sink the ship by his order. He knew this was going to happen to him, and he had a nervous breakdown. I never found out what happened to him, but he got replaced, went someplace, and this other fellow took over with this other mission that he had. And so we became good friends, the commander of the now base, and I had set up, I had got together with friends of mine at the Naval Air Station in San Diego, which is Miramar, and it was Navy at that time. And I wanted to set up a command center, a CQI, Command Control Communication and Intelligence Center Training Center, at the base, which is way out, way beyond the normal requirements of a reserve center. I'd set this up. So I flew down to San Diego. I went over to the base. I ran the car, went over the base. I talked to this friend of mine, and he gave me 14 F-14 fighter computers that's used for training F-14s. So the commander there also shipped those up to the Naval Reserve Center for me. I didn't even have to transport them. So I could set them up in a step-down area.
In Medford?
Command center in the airport at the Navy Reserve Center.
In Medford?
In Medford, yeah. And well, it was just outside of Medford. And so I was doing all kinds of stuff, and we were training sea cadets. And these sea cadets kept joining. There were some of them families of some of these Navy officers, and then there were other people, and we had more ship models in the mall, and there was a second big group of people came in from that second group of using the models for the Navy. And so we were getting all these top families for the sea cadets. And so the sea cadets then were instructed in extraterrestrial. And that's where some of them actually, after school, in the rural areas, went out to one of the farms, three or four of the kids. The lady would show up from the other side of the barn, and she had the big display, which floated, and she instructed them for another hour. And they did that like three or four times a week. And so then that was taking place with some of the officers' children, not just other people, other people's families' kids. And so this whole thing is wild about what we were doing in the regular stuff, which is going on, but it was related to extraterrestrial. Those sea cadets formed their own space battle group for their training. They use naval officers, and listed personnel's names and titles, just like they're in the Navy. We took them aboard submarines, aircraft carriers, destroyers.
Where did you take them on board submarines, for example? Where did you go? San Diego?
San Diego.
Uh-huh, all San Diego.
And then I got Admiral Marsh, who's commander of Naval Base Seattle.
Uh-huh.
And he came down and threw holy water on the console at the Red Lion Hotel. And so I got to know him real well.
Wow.
And he made arrangements for me to take 26 of the top people in the console. And we went up to the base. We went aboard the USS Alaska. And we went out to sea for 4 days. Submerged. And so the sea cadets got to do the same thing. And what that console is doing is literally unbelievable. I haven't even touched on it. So it's not just what happened at that top of the mountain where all of us were taken out into the galaxy, every one of us, them and us too. But now,
when you left the luncheon, you were going to tell us one thing about when you left the luncheon.
Now listen to this, okay?
Yeah.
The mayor bought this new, it was like a station wagon. It had both the power in the front and the power in the back, like a Jeep would be.
It was a four-wheel drive vehicle.
Four-wheel drive vehicle, yes.
Right.
And so he managed to get it up there, and he insisted that I sit next to him in the front. And we had three other people in the back. So we're going down this hill, and we're starting to slip. Now, off the driver's side, which would be down the west side of
the
hill.
Okay, now this is, you're leaving the luncheon, you're going down the mountain, and you began to slip, correct?
Yes, so
right.
We didn't actually turn over, but this happened about three times, and we're still just doing 3 miles an hour, okay, or stopping. And so he has this heart attack. So we stopped at a place where he goes unconscious at the wheel.
Gee.
And so I turn the engine off, and I put my foot over there to get the brake.
Yeah.
And then I pull the other one, and we get out, and we couldn't get out on the downside of the hill, or we would fall down the mountain.
Sure.
Okay?
Sure.
So we had to get him out of there, and the three of us got him physically out. He's unconscious. We got him into the back. And then another guy came up and sat where I was, and I had already gone over and started the car up to go down the hill. Well, we finally got down the hill, like over an hour to get down there. We got to the freeway. I took him to the hospital. I drove him to the hospital. We did. He was partially revived and partially conscious.
Which hospital did you take him to? Rogue or St. Mary's or what?
The Rogue Hospital.
Uh-huh.
And that's where Mary had been for cancer there.
Ah, okay.
And she had cancer twice while we were up there. But we were there 15 years. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is, what's extremely interesting about this event, at the next meeting that we had, standard meeting, we quit. We didn't talk about the normal Navy League meeting part at all. We just talked about this meeting and what took place. And lo and behold, some of the people couldn't remember driving up the hill. Some of them couldn't remember the big yellow signs. Rick Holt's son, along with other kids, went over there the very night after we came back. And stole all of the yellow signs and took them to school. Rick Holt's son was with the other kids and did this.
What the heck? Yeah, all right.
And he was kind of a wild kid. But what I'm trying to say is the mayor didn't remember his getting a heart attack.
Huh.
He didn't remember us taking him to the hospital. So his whole mind couldn't remember the entire event. Okay, Rick Holt got a different version in his mind. He said the vehicles, the three vehicles, were space vehicles. They weren't helicopters.
Right.
Okay, he had a different version. And so, and then he couldn't remember where we went when we left. And I then tried to get him to tell me, okay, what do you remember? Right? He remembers that something took place while we were eating. I said, what was it? Tell me what you saw. Okay? He didn't give me a good description. Like, he didn't go out there with the rest of us. He went out there, but he doesn't remember it. So three or four of the other people, some of them remembered almost everything that I could remember.
Mm-hmm.
Others only could remember 20% of what happened. Now, who played with their minds to turn them off?
It sounds like that building may not have been what you perceived it to be, and it was something else, and it's probably long gone by now. It may have been a configuration of an ET craft, then it left. After you left, it left, and there may not be anything. Could you find that place again now if you had to?
I don't think I could.
Not without the signs.
I think there's a couple of them up there who went back, and their kids went there, and they took four-wheel drive cars up the side of this thing and got up to the top, and they were asked very politely to please leave. So the people that told them that were dressed very nice, extremely polite, mm-hmm. and suggested that it's too dangerous. Please drive extremely slow down the side of this, and please don't come back.
Well, one wonders what's underneath that mountain.
Yeah, what's inside that mountain?
Yeah.
And how did this room change from this antique type of building?
Yeah.
Everything brown. Even the carpeting was brown.
Your memory is absolutely extraordinary. Yeah.
Well, all I'm saying is that a few of us remembered exactly what took place,
mm-hmm.
but several of the people, their whole mind was all like turned off to what
mm-hmm.
took place,
mm-hmm.
which that's its mind control again.
Right.
And again, I'm saying that people don't realize that they're using mind control on us. They are.
Oh, sure.
And, for them to do this with this Navy League consul that was into extraterrestrial, what was the real intent? Not what they said, but what was the real intent?
Well, you were taken out there, for some reason. I'm going to try and get in touch with Rick, if he's still around. I hope he is. He lives very close. I can get there in 5 minutes. He lives right near. I've been up to his house, not in it, but to it. I know where he lives. We'll find out if he's there.
Well, I think you said he lost the last...
It wasn't the last one. It was several elections ago. He was defeated.
And he was around for quite a while, but then nobody could find him. And I talked to his son, and his son mentioned that she had gone to Goldwater's house.
Arizona?
And talked to Goldwater.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And but he had come back, and then he thought the second time that he went back there, the sun set back. And we never did get
I'll look into it tomorrow, Bill, and let you know.
Okay.
Now, let me bring...
Go ahead.
You got some more? Go ahead.
No, just one thing. It's just extremely interesting where you're calling from right now. This is unreal. Okay.
Well, it's totally weird. I to have spoken to Rick Holt,
wow.
To have been to his house, to have been here...
Wow.
When you were here... I don't know what years those would have been, in the 80s, I assume.
Yeah.
80s and 90s. When
we've been back. Yeah. We've been here now another 18 years.
Well, I was the... you probably saw me. I was the television news director and anchor man for the NBC television station in Medford, every night on the air, twice a night, doing the news. So you may have seen
one
me.
Of your one of your Navy League fellows officers. Actually, he's president of the council right now. I think he had your position on the radio.
Yeah, it was television.
Okay.
I was on television.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. We're closing loops here.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. Well, I will do what I can to find out about Rick for you, for sure.
I appreciate it.
You know, they say there are no coincidences. I don't have the answers, but I tend to believe that. This is pretty wild. Yeah. Let me bring Frank and George back on here. Frank Chili, are you there?
I am here.
Okay, let's get that cell phone working if we can, and so we can understand. that's quite a luncheon story.
My God, Jeff, I got to tell you what triggered it too. There's so many synchronicities in this story. I called Bill this afternoon, and I had sent him some documents that some of them I had gotten from your website regarding a meeting that Clark McClelland had had with Goldwater at a Canaveral launch,
uh-huh.
Where Goldwater was asking Clark about the German scientists, about Debus, about Kanemeyer, and they were talking about Aldebaran. And when Bill started reading that stuff, it triggered a recall of that luncheon event. And he said, "You think I could tell that tonight?" I said, "You have to tell that story tonight."
That's wild. Well, I know our paths have crossed, and I was on the air every night on the local television station here doing the news, and I think the same time that Bill was here. Okay, we need to bring George on here now. George, are you still awake there? Hello, George. George may have... It's pretty late back there.
I'm here.
There you are. Hi. Okay. Welcome back, George. What do you think about these remarkable events that we're hearing about?
Well, the part about going to other planets sounds funny, but I've probably talked to 50 people who claim stories like that. And, of course, you know...
Well, it just takes one.
I say it. The first 50, he kind of questioned it. After that, you just kind of take it as normal type thing.
Right, yeah.
I often ask, what did it look like on the other planet? I don't know if we have time to mention that.
Yeah, we got time. Tell us about that city you looked down upon, that futuristic city. And it was obviously out of our solar system somewhere. But
someplace, yeah. Different people saw different things.
Uh-huh.
And so I can just say my version. A number of others got close to what I said. It was an enormous facility. It had futuristic architecture for everything that was there. And most everything was... was transparent. It could have been glass or some other material. And there were all kinds of vehicles that were moving in the city, different shaped vehicles, like large, what we call buses, but they're floating. And there weren't any tracks. And you didn't see trucks or that sort of thing. But everything was brilliant colors and brilliant facilities, just gorgeous buildings.
And your perspective was, what, a mile over the city, something like that, or closer to it?
Yeah, and we parked there. We parked, they parked us there, whatever. And so then we started to move, and as soon as we started to move, we were back in the old building.
Just like
but,
that.
It was absolutely gorgeous. Now, I want to just say one other thing. My address of the last place was 1553.
Oh, no, wait, you don't need to give this out over the air. You can get it to Frank, he can get it to me. We don't want anybody bothered who may be living there.
Okay, you're right.
So just
you're
give
right.
it to Frank,
okay.
and I'll...
I'll give it to Frank.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, now we haven't even touched upon our conversation timeline for tonight about so many different things. I got a list, time travel and all that. We'll have to do that next time. You might talk just in general terms about aerospace companies and how they approach the concept of time travel. Was this at TRW? Or was this Lockheed, or was this Douglas, or was it well known? And we'll talk about Dr. Debus and the others next time as well. So,
okay, just one thing about the companies. They were all involved in this. The write-up that Frank has brought about the Lockheed effort is extremely accurate, and I just have to say, whoever put it together, they did it exactly as it was. The only difference is that the other companies were involved more doing the same thing, and particularly Northrop Grumman. And I would say Northrop Grumman might be 50% more, roughly the same thing. And North American is involved in it. Even Boeing up at Seattle is involved, and so it's not just one company. Even a little bit of the San Diego facility at that time was Convair. People were involved also, and they were involved heavily with the facility across the bay, Naval Air Station San Diego. And it was very convenient for us to play directly with them, because if we just take the boat across.
Yeah.
And
what kinds of Bill, excuse me, what kinds of time travel things, we have about 10 minutes here, were you privy to that you knew were going on with these companies? Was time travel actually occurring, or was it being dealt with hypothetically and mathematically, like something Caltech would postulate about, or was it really going on?
Well, there was both of your suggestions going on. There were people in Caltech that were just studying it, but there are other people in Caltech out at the Navy facility, China Lake, who were working with Navy on programs that would allow them to have missions to other stars in the galaxy. And so any of these then would come up with the statement of like time travel, and what's the vehicle, what's the mission, what's the time, what's the location. All of that was being studied right in Pasadena. But it was being implemented out at China Lake and at Area 51. And so you had different people and different companies with different spaceships that they're designing that are going to operate in different manners. And so if you have a vehicle that's going to go from here to, say, Alpha Centauri, you have to cruise at some speed, and time is going to be different, totally different. And so like the Solar Warden people, who, when they come back from the 20-year Navy space battle groups, and they're given permission to come back to Earth, they come back over like a 3 to 6 week time period where their brain has everything that they did removed. And so now they can sign up like they did 20 years ago when they're 21 years old. They're now back being 21 years old. So you have the reverse of time travel in that event. And again, this that alone substantiates time travel.
And, so was time travel being discussed at levels that you were familiar with and involved with as being a real and accessible mode that we were dealing with, or was it still hypothetical? You say that people were transported to other stars, other galaxies. Now, that's not necessarily time travel, but it is travel.
Well, yes, but you move into a different sector of the galaxy.
Right.
And then the situation of moving to two other galaxies, and then this goes on to where how many galaxies do you have in the solar system? I'm sorry, in the universe.
Too many to count.
Wait a minute. Then it went on to other universes, which are like boxed in next to us.
Pages in a book.
So what we're saying is that this is a whole different thing that's taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And like the other thing we discussed tonight, where people, they live longer. And so it's that's the extended life program.
Bill, may I indulge and ask you again? And you can tell me, I'm not going to answer that. Are you doing anything of an extraterrestrial nature to help you stay so healthy? Did you learn anything from these people, or did our own people come up with things? Your mind is so sharp, your memory is so full and clear. I'm just wondering if, and you don't have to tell me, just say it's none of your damn business. But are you doing anything that you learned about that the average person wouldn't have access to?
I have to say no, I'm not doing anything different. I'm taking somebody's suggestion telepathically. And what that is a few things where you simply don't smoke. You don't drink,
right?
And you try to do some amount of exercise.
Oh, sure.
Which everybody that's non-smokers are doing this and can have a longer life.
Oh, you can add 20 years on your life by stop processed food, meat, dairy, smoking, drinking. Sure. It's not a secret.
Yeah, but I'm just saying there's nothing secret about it.
Right.
And we have this option, and for some reason a lot of people don't accept it.
Now,
Mary's brother, my girlfriend, okay, he was smoking when he was 9 years old.
Oh,
and
God.
He drank a fish.
Yeah.
So he died at 47.
Yeah.
He was brilliant.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. He's a brilliant guy. He worked at North American's Rocketdyne.
Mm-hmm.
He headed up as a manager the space equipment electronics system. And he died. I mean, this is insane.
Yeah.
He consumed himself with
poison and toxins. Now, Rocketdyne, there's another fascinating story. There's a lot going on underground at Rocketdyne. That's the site of the worst, one of the worst nuclear accidents in American history that no one talks about. They had a meltdown there, I guess, in the late 50s, early 60s. Rocketdyne was also the site, and this goes back to 1996 or 7, of a spacecraft that landed there. It was witnessed by an Air Force general who was retired, who put on his uniform the next day and went up there and was first day he went up there, the day of the event, and the military at the scene had secured the location up in the Santa Susana Mountains, and they wouldn't let him through. And they said, sorry, sir, you have to go back. They were turning everyone away. They were trying to drive up to the site of this, what appeared to be the location of this craft that came down. It was giving off sparks and coming down. This is over Los Angeles, and it landed in the mountains there. Well, he got angry, and he went back the next afternoon in his uniform, and all of a sudden this guard, and he said all the guards there were wearing non-insignia uniforms. They all looked the same, perfect health, perfect specimens. And he went up to this one, and the guard immediately in his uniform snapped to attention and saluted him. And he said, son, I want you to tell me exactly what the hell's going on up here. And the guard told him, he said, all I'm permitted to tell you, sir, is that a spacecraft was in trouble. It landed here last night. It was repaired, and it has gone. That's all he would tell him. But this I got from eyewitnesses and direct communication with this guy. So anyway, Rocketdyne, you mentioned that, all kinds of things going on there. Not so much anymore, but you never know when you come up to a place and it says Rocketdyne or whatever it says now, and it's the owners are the Department of Energy and Department of Defense and Boeing Aircraft. So what do you think's going on up there? Pretty obvious.
Well, actually, when I worked for North American after I got fired from Douglas, I started to work the next week. Again, from Dr. Debus's recommendation. I worked most of the time for 4 years at Rocketdyne.
Oh, my.
I was an advisor over at Valley, where the space shuttle came from.
Right.
And so there was dozens of different designs for space shuttles, many of them military, naval vehicles. They haven't been broadcasted.
There are a lot of things that you still can't talk about, Bill. Obviously, you're for one reason or another, you're not fully able or willing, and it's fine to disclose some things that you know about. You've let so much out and given so much information already. That's enough. It's enough to write a book, Bill, or three or four books, which I know you're working on. So, wow.
Yeah, that's what we're doing right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, we want to thank Dr. Bob Wood, who was also at Douglas when my dad was there, and his son Ryan, and all the work they've done. And Bob's been obviously a great help to you. So we will... We're just about out of time. I got to get one final word from George and Frank, and then you stay right there. We'll come right back to you. George, let's wrap it up here. What do you think?
Well, I think it's a matter of keeping your mind open to all kinds of possibilities.
And, yeah.
That Bill's got a lot of inside information, and that's the key. Is he in the right place at the right time? And that's what I often go by. If a person is at the right place at the right time, what he knows is the truth.
Like you coming down the elevator in that department store and scaring that poor extraterrestrial woman half to death. That's the right place at the right time.
I used to go into General Amay's office regularly, and I just happened to think that he had some beautiful...
You said that last time. I got it. You never forget when you see something like that. George, thank you very much.
May tie into what he knows.
Well, it probably does. Thanks, George. Talk to you next time.
Okay, bye-bye.
Frank, thank you very much for helping put this together tonight. Another fascinating journey with William Tompkins. And we'll hopefully next time get to some of these topics we were supposed to get to tonight.
Well, how astounding those topics are, Jeff. There's some incredible stories yet to come.
Well, the astounding, I would describe William Tompkins, Bill's mind, his recall, his detail. Just, it's amazing, amazing. Thank you, Frank.
My pleasure, Jeff. More to come.
Okay. And Bill Tompkins, I'll be in touch with you. Let that address be known to Frank, if you would, and I'll find out about Rick Holt. I'll find out about Rick and let you know.
Thank you. You're a gentleman and a scholar. Thank you.
No problem. All right, take care. Good night, Bill.
Right, good night.
All right. Well, there's a fascinating trip for all of us. 93 years young, 93 years whatever. Just a number. But Bill Tompkins is amazing. All right. That's our program tonight. And tomorrow, Thursday, we'll be back bright and early working for you. In fact, we'll be working tonight for you, put more news up. And DV Kids on tomorrow night. Jim Oglesby is on tomorrow night, part four of his remarkable story about ETs and the Apollo missions, the early missions, 7 and 8, I believe. We'll find out about that tomorrow night from Jim Oglesby. So lots ahead. Have a good night. Have a great day. And I hope you can join us again tomorrow night.